One of my favorite films is Cars. I think I may have mentioned that before. And there's a wonderful scene, and it's on a cold, wet, windy day, rather like the last few days here, of a school football match. None of the kids really want, the kind of dead-end kids, you know, none of them really want to play, and they stand around, you know, freezing to death, while the tubby PT teacher, who's also the referee, by the way, runs rings around them with the ball, imagining that he's Bobby Charlton. And he falls over, claims he was tripped, and awards himself a penalty, which he takes, scores, and then does a lap of honour round the pitch. It's a wonderful scene. The theme of today's scriptures is marriage. And reading through them, the scene of the teacher, you know, changing the rules to his own advantage struck a chord, because that's actually what Jewish men in the Old Testament had done in regards to marriage. In Jewish law, husband and wife were not equal. The woman was the property of her husband, just a possession amongst the other possessions he owned. But that, of course, was not how it was in the beginning. Over time, what had happened is that they'd reduced God's vision of marriage as a community of life and love, as the Vatican Council puts it, to a purely legalistic contract, concluded or annulled by human regulations. The husband simply had to hand his wife a writ of dismissal, and that was it. It was over. A woman had no claim to the fidelity of her husband, who could not, therefore, in juridical terms, be accused of adultery. And if you think of that famous incident, or infamous incident, if you like, in the gospel, of that poor woman who was caught in the act of adultery, thrown down in front of Jesus to see if he would say whether she ought to be stoned to death or not. There's no mention of the man involved in that story, although everyone knows that it takes two to tango. As we see in Genesis, there's no way that God intended such inequality. When the Pharisees put him to the test about divorce to see if he would contradict Moses, the great lawgiver, he replied, "It was because you were so unteachable that Moses allowed you to divorce." In other words, you wore him down. He did it for the sake of peace and quiet. It was only a concession. Divorce was never in God's plan. From the beginning, he made them male and female, and what God has united, man must not divide. However, of course, Jesus lived in a time where he had to acknowledge that divorce was a reality. So what he does instead is he can at least strike a blow for the equality of women. He says that any man who divorces his wife and takes up with another is now also guilty of adultery. It's not just the woman. So in sense, he couldn't be clearer on presenting marriage as the indissoluble unity of two persons who commit themselves to each other as equals. To use a popular modern phrase, it's really about leveling up. The same goes for his teaching about children. Having no status or rights or power, children can only be receptive. Everything is gift to them. They can't buy it. They don't have the power. So back in the house, when the disciples are a little bit disturbed about what he's just said, they're told that they also must be equally receptive, not relying on the power and status they have as men. Jesus insists, you know, that a person's significance is not gauged by power or strength or influence or status, but how close they actually are to the kingdom of heaven. Jesus' words on divorce, of course, are quite challenging because they emphasize that marriage is not based on convenience or personal satisfaction, but on commitment. The ideal is the imitation of Christ's love for his church, for whom, of course, he laid down his life. To create a beautiful relationship, sacrifices have to be made. And it's clear that God did not want his creation of marriage to be abused by selfish indulgence to the extent that it becomes seen as a temporary state, valid only until it becomes tiresome, inconvenient, or until a better offer comes along. This, of course, is a real challenge to our culture today, where fickleness and egocentric choice often dominate, and where people, some people anyway, change their partners, you know, like they change their socks. In forbidding divorce, Jesus is recovering God's original plan for marriage. He intended it to be a partnership for life. However, as we all know, life isn't always that straightforward, and divorce is sometimes inevitable. If one of the partners is weak, through drink or infidelity or laziness or cruelty, it can cause a great deal of suffering, and nobody has to endure that. That's not what you sign up for when you get married. Divorce is not something that people expect or they want from marriage, but it happens, and it often brings heartache and pain. We all know people who have experienced such pain, often through no fault of their own. It can happen to anyone, and it's a great pity when it does. It follows then that we as Christians should do all we can to help those who need both emotional and practical support after a divorce as they try to get their lives back on track.